Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSIN Podcast Network.
What up, and welcome in another edition of the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Really, really solid episode on tap for you today. Raheem Palmer does a great job covering the NBA for the Action Network. Will be with us to discuss his thoughts on the Final Four, where we're at. Raheem, just like me, invested monetarily in the Los Angeles Clippers' successes in terms of an NBA Finals. And much like me as well, feels vindication about the fact that the Los Angeles Clippers were, in fact, the best team of the Western Conference before Kawhi Leonard went down with an injury. But we have a lot to get to, so we won't dilly or dally, but I wanted to discuss a couple of things here before we get to Raheem, because I think it's really important. First off, let's start with analysis of the game later this evening, as the Los Angeles Clippers will be meeting the Phoenix Suns tonight. Game 3 of this Western Conference Final Series. Of course, as we know, Clippers staring another 2-0 deficit in the face in this series heading back home, and that's where I wanted to begin. Not so much with this series as a whole, because look, after two games, the Clippers, it's eerily similar, right, to what happened against Utah. Two very winnable games for the Los Angeles Clippers. Single digits, or single possession, I should put it that way. I always put that. Single possession games in the waning seconds of each, and yet unable, especially, oh, just a traumatic way to lose game two. But regardless, I want to discuss a theory that we all know is very, very prevalent in betting the NBA in the postseason. The Clippers are down 2-0 and heading back home. Value, baby, right? Let's go out there and let's pound away. First quarter, first half, let's fire, let's roll, let's do it. Problem here. A very big problem. First off, let's talk about the numbers themselves. Clippers right now are a one-point underdog at home, and yet first half, they are a 1.5-point favorite. First quarter, they are a one-point favorite in a lot of stops. There's actually a couple half points out there, so essentially a pick. But here's the deal. There is no value for you as a bettor in betting into these situations. Went back, thanks to DraftKings for helping me dig up some of the first quarter numbers from the postseason previously. This postseason only. And I'll give you the numbers first, and then we'll dive into what exactly we saw as bettors. Teams that are down 2-0 going back home are 2-4 against the spread in the first quarter this season. Teams down 2-0 going back home are 2-3-1 against the spread in the first half this season. That is not good. Those are losing records. But here's the deal. It's more than just the losing records here, folks. Let's walk through some of the numbers, and we'll show you how there's really no value in betting those kind of things, right? We'll start with the Wizards and 76ers. So game three, right, down 2-0 going back home. Wizards were a 5.5-point underdog for the game. 5.5-point underdog for the game. And yet, in the first quarter, they were 2.5-point favorites. They were 1.5-point underdogs in the first half. If that doesn't show you enough of a discrepancy, I don't know what does. Philly beats them up in both quarters, and you lose both first quarter and first half. But go through this list. Milwaukee, a 1.5-point favorite for the game against the Miami Heat in Game 3. Right? Heat going back down, going back home down 2-0. And yet, Heat were a 1.5-point favorite for the first quarter. They were a 1.5-point favorite for the first half. Got blown out in both quarters. Milwaukee wins first quarter and first half. And again, it's not about the result. It is about the numbers that you as a bettor are getting. Brooklyn and Boston. Brooklyn was a 7.5-point favorite in that game against the Boston Celtics. And yet Boston was a first quarter favorite at -1.5. Brooklyn ended up winning the first quarter just barely, right? They were only down by one. Boston ended up pushing, winning the first half as a whole. But regardless, again, as you look at this, the number that you are getting as a bettor, a 7.5-point spread for the game, and yet you are only getting 3 in the first half, and you're laying 1.5 in the first quarter. So as you might sit back, and you'll hear a lot about, hey man, there's a lot of value in this trend, it's been hitting at a large clip, the books have adjusted. And there's a reason why you hear large sample sizes when it comes to this trend. Because this season, again, you are 2-4 in the hole. If you're betting first quarters on these teams that are down 2-0 going back home, and you are 2-3-1 against the spread, if you are betting first half on these teams going back down or going back home down 2-0. And the Los Angeles Clippers fit this bill here today. So just a reminder for you. It's a really popular trend, and I totally understand it. But at the same time, it is for you, right? We always use the word value. It's the V word. Everybody wants to use it. I don't find value here. There's value here. There is no value in betting this trend anymore. The books have adjusted. You're getting awful numbers, and this has regressed, and you're seeing it at like a massive clip in this postseason up to this point. So it's definitely something that you as a bettor should keep track of as you move forward, and it's just something that we should really, really get out there. Now, as far as what we just saw between Milwaukee and Atlanta, goddamn, man, we got to give these Hawks credit. They are absolutely phenomenal. Trae Young is becoming more and more and more popular, and he is becoming more and more one of my favorite players to watch in the association. Absolutely brilliant performance from him and the Atlanta Hawks yesterday, getting a game one win over the Milwaukee Bucks. And how, I shouldn't even put it that way. You know where to start. Trae Young yesterday, 17 to 34 from the floor, 48 points, had 11 assists, 7 rebounds, was totally brilliant. Here's the thing. And I asked this to Raheem, you're going to listen to in a couple of minutes. Do we trust Mike Budenholzer to make adjustments? If you read my write-up and you listen to any of the hits here on VSIN, one of the things that, of course, I had mentioned multiple times that the Hawks have going for them, if the Bucks are going to roll out this drop coverage on pick and rolls, guess what's going to happen? Trae Young is going to eat them alive in that soft mid-range area of the floor, and they absolutely did. Trae Young was brilliant in that area, hit so many, was a lot of floaters, finishing on some of these alley-oops, but the three-point shooting as a whole, again, pops up and is really solid for the most part in terms of the amount of three-point shots that he hit. Wasn't really efficient, 4-13. And look, when they went small, Milwaukee, they forced him into taking some of those bad logo shots. It's not really his hit right now, right? It's not really where he goes in terms of his offensive game. But there's a couple of things that stick out here, right? And I think Raheem brings up a great point, because I thought at the end of that game, some of the more effective defensive possessions were when finally Bud decides to wake up and go small with Giannis at the five. They were really solid throughout the shot clock, but gave up a lot of offensive rebounds. John Collins, Clint Capella combined for 9 offensive rebounds. The Hawks finished with 12 overall, were absolutely brilliant on the boards in that regard in terms of their offensive rebounding rate, in terms of grabbing their missed shots, 26.7 in terms of the offensive rebounding rate for the Atlanta Hawks compared to 23.5 to the Milwaukee Bucks. So those small ball lineups, it's pick your poison. Do you want to trade off some really solid defensive possessions for maybe a weakness along the glass? Which I would argue that I think you want to do for the most part, because that soft area of the floor, Trae Young is going to kill you again from that area if you keep doing this drop pick and roll coverage garbage. Or do you stick with what you're going with and hope that Trae Young's shooting falls off? And I do think, as I mentioned in the piece, right, my Bucks in 4 bet, I think that's over with. So I got the Bucks in 5. But as I mentioned, yesterday was on Atlanta, +8. Already took him again +7.5, because this is going to be an uber competitive series, because the Hawks do have a lot in their arsenal that is going to bother Milwaukee as a whole. And you saw it yesterday. And until the market adjusts, I think this should be probably a lot closer to 6, 6.5 than it should be 8. And I'm still going to find myself on the Atlanta Hawks quite a bit from a side perspective throughout this series. So we'll see if Bud wants to make the adjustment. He wasted a good Jrue Holiday game. Finally, he wakes up from his shell offensively, but you wasted away. So let's not waste any more time. Speaking of, Raheem Palmer is going to join us on the other side. We talk about what he sees in a lot of these series, what he feels like from the Ben Simmons situation as well. He's a Philly guy, so we'll get his thoughts on what the 76ers might do. But please, again, as I always plead, like, rate, review, subscribe. Always appreciate the support for the podcast. Raheem Palmer joins us next.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Interact with the show on Twitter @MeJVT. @Roach_97 and at VSIN Live.
All right, let's welcome in the guest for this week. He was with us really early, actually, in the life of the podcast. I think episode 2 or 3, Raheem Palmer, writer for the Action Network, does an awesome job in terms of covering the association over for Action. So what's up, man? How has this postseason been treating you? We'll get into everything in terms of the games, but I'm really curious, and now that we're down to the Final Four, what's been going on with you?
Okay, life has been crazy. So I actually went to both Game 7s. I went to I live in Philadelphia. I had a – after – like, first I had the Nets in Game 5, So I bet them for really big money. And then after they won game five, I came back and took the Bucks down 3-2 at plus 195 to win the series.
Yeah.
And I live in Philadelphia, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to game seven. And I actually bet the Bucks in game seven, and I was sitting courtside. I was sitting right behind Travis Scott and Emmanuel Sanders. And I'm, like, screaming at the top of my lungs because I have this big Bucks bet in. And, you know, that hit. And then the next day I drove back to Philly, and I was like, you know what, I want to go to game seven again. Yeah. So I actually went to game seven. I had courtside seats for that one. Seats weren't as good as the ones I had in Brooklyn because – Philadelphia people actually care about their team. So, I mean, I took a little it was disappointing, but I saw the way the game was going, and I took the Hawks second half. So they ended up winning. But, you know, it's really been a great postseason. I'm enjoying this conference finals, even though I wish Kawhi Leonard didn't get hurt.
Yeah. Oh, well, and we'll get to that because I know that you have some interest in the Los Angeles Clippers monetarily as well. So I'm curious, you know, I ask this a lot because – your philosophy when it comes to betting the postseason. So, like, Raheem, for me, I tend to get a little bit more patient. You know, I'm really analytically and data-driven, and so, you know, I feel comfortable betting series and sitting back and waiting for good prices on those because I'm confident that the numbers and the analysis that I see is going to play out over the course of a larger sample size. So I won't get involved game-to-game unless there seems to be some pretty big anomalies on a game-to-game basis. How do you handle postseason betting?
I'm doing a little bit of everything. Like, I'll play series prices. I like to play game to game just because I feel like I can figure out the adjustments, like, the teams are going to make. Like, I mean, you're a Clippers fan. You see Tyronn Lue. He's a little bit slow to adjust, but once you give him a couple games, he's going to figure things out. And so like with the Jazz series, he went small and I felt like the Jazz had no answers. So then I got a chance to hammer every single game.
Yep. So let's talk about, since that's a natural jumping off point here, Los Angeles Clippers and Phoenix Suns. This podcast will be up today on Thursday, so we'll get that game later this evening. No rest for my Clippers. The league hates them, obviously. So let's talk about this from a game plan perspective. I haven't seen anything officially yet on Chris Paul. We know we have the report that they are confident that he is going to play, so we'll see if that is actually going to officially be announced by the team or the league. So let's just start with the fact that let's say Chris Paul plays here. At this point right now, according to the market, we're still sitting at Phoenix. It depends on where you shop for your numbers. But I'm looking at my screen right now. I've got, if it loads up here, here we go. Phoenix still minus one on your screen as well?
Yeah, same thing I have as well.
Yeah, so the Suns are a one-point favorite or so. You'd expect that's going to get to like two or something like that if Chris Paul is officially announced. So let's say Chris Paul plays. We'll put it simply, what is the hope of the Los Angeles Clippers if Chris Paul is going to be out there later tonight?
I think the hope is that Chris Paul is rusty coming back from the health and safety protocols. I'm a really big – like, this is one of the spots that I always like to play. I like to fade teams where a star player is coming back. You got a guy with a heavy usage, you know, being reincorporated into the lineup, and I think that's always tough on teams. I don't really have the exact numbers on that, but that's something I like to play. And, you know, in this particular spot, there's always the desperation angle. So you see the Suns are actually laying a point and a half for the full game, but for the first half, the Clippers are laying the first half. And, I mean, we all know about teams down 0-2 coming home. You know, I think they're like 31-9 the last five seasons, and that's like 77%. And even though it's being priced in, I still feel like there's an advantage there. So I think that's where I'm looking to take it tonight.
So when we talk about adjustments, it's funny. You know, it's funny, Raheem, is like, I think one of the more underrated aspects of the series that is not being talked about as much is, you know, there was a lot of, why is Zubac playing so many minutes? But I think what's being lost here is, I don't know if Ty Lue's got a choice because Marcus Morris is hurt. It seems like he's not fully healthy, right? He only plays 21 minutes in game one, only 25 minutes in game two. And I don't think we saw him in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. And so when we talk about adjustments for Ty Lue, like, in your opinion, what is left in the bag for him? Because the one thing I can think of is more minutes for Luke Kennard, and you're trading off, you know, defense for offense. But he showed in the fourth quarter that he's still got that lightning quick release and he can really help them in that regard. But I think that's the only card he's got left to play.
I think the one card he has to play is playing Nicholas Batum more. He only played 15 minutes in game two, and then I think he only played 20 minutes in game one. He's playing Rondo way too much, and Rondo really isn't – he's not playoff Rondo of old. So I think you got to play Batum a little bit more. I haven't seen – like, I'm really confused about this Marcus Morris situation because in game one, he didn't start the second half, but then he played later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then in game two, he played, but he really hasn't been on the injury report. So it's just, like, that's confusing to me. So I kind of need to see more. Like, I'm going to assume that you're going to get 24, 25 minutes out of him. But I think if they play Batum a little bit more, they have – and I think you probably have to play man a little bit more as well. So
yep. I completely agree with that. And you're right. He hasn't been. And, like, for right now, on the injury report again, it just came out, the 10-30 one, at least for the West Coast. Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard, both on the injury report, but no Marcus Morse. So if there's a limit on minutes – and that's the thing with Ty Lue, right? Sometimes you scratch your head because he does use the first two games as like that weird adjustment period where you don't know what's going on with the rotations. You don't know what he's thinking. But when he finds something, he'll beat you over the head with it until you figure out what's going on. And I'm really interested because I think the trade-off from a schematic standpoint is with this small ball lineup, because there's a lot of, well, DeAndre Ayton's going to kill you. If DeAndre Ayton kills me with 25 and 15, like, I'll take it, because I'd rather go small, be able to shoot the lights out, force him out in space on the perimeter. And he's not as bad as a Rudy Gobert on the perimeter, but it's still not where he wants to be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers, they're staying in this series with the three-point shot. Like, I mean, they have 33 three-pointers in this series. I think the Suns only have 19. And you could look at some of those games. I mean, like, even game two, I mean, the Suns are up 96-90. Paul George hits a three, and it's just like they're right back in it. And it's just, it feels like they're just, it feels like the Suns just have this math problem, but they're just so hyper efficient that, you know, they're getting by. But I think at home, if, you know, the role players are going to shoot better, as they say role players do at home, then the Clippers have a really good shot to steal this one.
Yeah, less Rajon Rondo. Couldn't agree more. No, more Nick Batum. Maybe a little bit more Luke Kennard. As he is, I think he has shown, at least from an offensive standpoint, he's well worth his weight. Maybe defensively gets a little lost, but if you play a little bit more zone and you're switching everything like they are, he won't get lost as much. It's just like, all right, man, like, just switch everything and don't worry about it, unless it's a big, and you'll be absolutely fine. So overall, what do you have in terms of the Clippers? You have futures, right?
Yeah, I have the Clippers. I took the Clippers to win the Western Conference and the NBA Finals back in February. Like, okay. I was one of those people who I really wasn't high on the Clippers last year. I do not like Doc Rivers. I call him Glenn because there's only one Doc in Philadelphia. I do not like Doc Rivers. I love Lou Williams, you know, just as a person, because I actually partied with him in Philly during my DJ years. But I felt like him and Montrezl Harrell were, like, defensive liabilities. And I wasn't high on the Clippers last year, and I felt like they made all the necessary changes. Now, of course, one of those changes was Serge Ibaka. And I feel like if he was in this series, this series would be completely different. So, you know, I made those futures bets back in February. And obviously I didn't know Kawhi Leonard would get hurt. So I'm not going to really be able to see this come to fruition the way I thought it would. But I feel like I made a great bet.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I feel so. I'm like indignant on this now, because after they beat Dallas for our website at VSiN, I wrote a piece like, you know, the Clippers are the best team in the Western Conference. And then, you know, they do what they did against Utah. And nobody will talk me off, Raheem, of they were the best team in the West. If Kawhi Leonard, even without Serge, if Kawhi Leonard was healthy, I think they're a terrible matchup for Phoenix. I think they showed in those games in LA against Utah how much better they are than teams, and they have figured things out. Like, I'm indignant. You will not talk me off of the fact that this was the best team in the West if they were fully healthy. There's no shot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and sometimes I've had to learn that sometimes the best team doesn't win. Like I honestly felt like I would go to my grave believing that the 2018 Rockets were better than the Warriors that year. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's the same situation here. And, you know, a lot of people want to criticize Paul George for missing those free throws, but like you said earlier, the Clippers aren't getting any rest. They played Paul George has played 453 out of the possible 528 minutes the last 28 games. I mean, this guy's played 40 minutes and 10 out of the last 15 playoff games for the Clippers. And it's just like he's giving it his all. He's like, he's leading the postseason in minutes. I just don't want to hear any more Paul George slander at all. This guy is returned to form from his Pacers years. I think they're not catching a break right now.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast, only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
Yep, I completely agree with you. The Paul George thing is lazy, and I'm a little over it too. And it's funny how two missed free throws completely negate the fact that he splits a double team and finishes and also hits a tough mid-range jumper to give him a lead multiple times in the last 30 seconds. But that's fine. I am very much a stan of Paul George, and doesn't he gets a lot of crap for no reason whatsoever. So All right, let's move on to the next series. But before we move on to the series as a whole, let's rewind a little bit, because obviously you're a Philly guy. You see the Philadelphia stuff in the background, the paraphernalia. So I have been – this is a simplistic way to put it, but I will ask this, and I'll ask your opinion on it. I thought that last series for Atlanta was more about what Philly failed to do as opposed to what Atlanta did. And I think when you win a series over seven games and you still post a negative 3.7 net rating, that tells you what you need to know about what transpired in that series. Do you think that's a fair assessment of that?
I think it's fair, but I do think we have to give Atlanta some credit. Like, yeah. I mean, like even in that game seven, they hunted Seth Curry pretty much off the floor. And I thought that was big. Like, I felt like it's just like little things. I mean, we have three all NBA centers. We have Rudy Gobert, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid. They're all out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's for different reasons, but a big part of it was their inability to defend certain actions. And I love Joel Embiid, but Trae Young got that lob to him, lob to Capella all day, either the lob or the floater. And I felt like that was big. I mean, Joel Embiid, he played his heart out. And I'm never going to criticize Joel Embiid. But it's just when you have key things that you can exploit, I think that's big. And the fact that Atlanta was able to do it with the personnel that they have, I got to give them some credit. But I do think a lot of it was Philly. Philly should have won that series. I think one of the things that people are underestimating is the loss of Danny Green. Mm-hmm. Because he would have provided that two-way three and D wing. And you know, they wouldn't have been able to hunt Seth Curry if he's in that situation. Like, you know, Doc put in Thibault down a stretch of game seven, and Thibault immediately fouls Herter. And I think that was pretty much what – yeah, that pretty much, you know, iced the series. So it's just like Philly did a lot wrong, but, I mean, they had certain things go against them. And then you got to give Atlanta some credit because they really did a good job at exploiting the things that they could.
And it's a great point about the centers, because I thought what you watched last night, especially down the stretch where Bud finally gets his head out of his ass and he goes to that Giannis at center lineup, and all of a sudden, and look, granted, they ended up losing, but that was the best stretch of defense for Milwaukee throughout that entire game, because all of a sudden that little soft mid-range area with Brook Lopez dropping back in coverage isn't there anymore. And Trae Young's like, oh, wait, no, I can't just drop floaters anymore. So let me just settle for really big threes. And they stop falling. Now, ultimately, they get it done. Do you trust Bud that he's going to realize, okay, we are best with Giannis at center in this type of a matchup? This drop coverage clearly is not going to work against a guy like Trae Young, who loves that area of the floor, and the shooting follows from there for all these guys. Let's go small, and let's get away from what I've been doing this entire time.
I trust Bud, but I think the problem is that even when you switch, you give up something.
Yeah.
So basically, when they switch – they gave up a ton of offensive rebounds. Offensive rebounds won that game for the Hawks. Like, there was a play in which I think they had three offensive rebounds off threes, and then Jack Collins hits the three to bring it within one. And then the game winner was obviously Clint Capella's offensive rebound. Mm-hmm. So you're pulling Giannis out of the paint, and you're removing that extra rebounder. And also, the Hawks have proven that they're going to match up hunt. So it's just – no matter what you do, you're giving up something. Mm-hmm. But I think Milwaukee's the better team, and I think that should play out throughout the course of the series. But I definitely think, after watching that game, I think Atlanta's live. But I think – like, I don't think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. I think we're looking – I think Atlanta could still win at home. But I think without their wings and DeAndre Hunter and a banged-up Bogdanovich, they're kind of fighting an uphill battle. Like, I don't expect Trae Young to drop 48 every game.
Right. No, and so so my thought on the series was, like in our write-up over the website, I took the Bucks in five, but I also put in there, and I was on Atlanta yesterday catching eight, because I think this is going to be a series where, from a series perspective, if we look back, we'll see, well, that was a relatively short series, but each one of those games is going to be uber competitive. Like, there were a lot of things in this matchup that Atlanta could do offensively that would bother Milwaukee, and you saw it in game one, exactly what you thought was going to happen, exploiting the job coverage, shooting the ball extremely well, like you mentioned, being able to rebound. Atlanta's a super underrated rebounding team. I think it's what helped them a lot in that New York Knicks series too. So as we move forward, look, so we got like game two, for example. Hawks opened up +7.5. We don't see a massive adjustment, right? Market closed 8 yesterday, 7.5 here. I think the market's got to make a little bit of an adjustment here because I think I'm with you, right? The Bucks are going to win this series. They have so much that over the course of 4, 5, 6, 7 games, it'll play out in their favor. But they're not like 7.5, 8 points better on their home court than this Atlanta team.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think Middleton's got to play better. I mean, at the end of the day, Middleton's not going to go 0-9. He's not going to go 6-23, especially with the lack of wings here. I'm expecting a bigger game from him. It's just it's a shame that they kind of wasted a 33-point game from Drew.
Right, especially after how he'd been playing, right?
Yeah, it's – That's the rough thing. So I think the Bucks can find themselves in a little bit of a dogfight, but they're no doubt they're going to win this series.
So let me ask you, so before we get you out of here again, Raheem Palmer with us, Action Network, does a great job covering the association over there. Let's bring you back to the Philly roots because this is, of course, the topic of conversation in the NBA circles. Now, I feel like I don't want to quite give up on Ben Simmons, and I feel like there's still quite a lot there given the proper path that he takes in terms of his development and what's around him. But what say you?
I was willing to drive Ben Simmons to the airport and get James Harden at the start of the season. But, I mean, we all know the situation with Fertitta and Houston. That wasn't really – it wasn't going to work out. But I think right now there's no way that you can trade Ben Simmons because you're basically selling low on him.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of got to build him back up, almost like a boxer after taking their first loss. And I think he just had a bad series. Like, I think that was the worst of Ben Simmons. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see Ben Simmons play at the level that he did in that series. So I think you kind of got to build him up a little bit and then try to make a trade because right now I don't know how much you can really get for him.
Right. Well, and that's because that was my argument. There's been a lot of like, hey, CJ McCollum, and you watch Philly closely. I don't know if CJ McCollum is what they need, right? I think they need more of like a guy who's going to be able to be a threat north, south, and attack in multiple areas of the floor, work well with Joel Embiid off ball, like that kind of a thing. And CJ McCollum is a good player. Don't get me wrong, but like his archetype as a player, I don't think fits what Philly needs.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you're getting worse on defense, and you're not really improving that much offensively. Like, what you really need, you need Damian Lillard. Right. But it's like, how realistic is that? And it's just like, to me, I'm not willing to make that defensive drop-off for just CJ McCollum. It's like I would need Paul George or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least somebody who can give me something, you know. And CJ's not it. I love him, but
I like the global odds have like I think it's Portland and then it's Washington as the top two, and clearly the ties are Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal. But if you're Portland or Washington, like, why the hell am I giving up either one of those guys for Ben Simmons at this point?
Exactly. So I think you kind of got to wait it out and see if you could build them up before making a move.
All right, Raheem. Before we get you out of here, let everybody know where they find the work, what you've been up to, because I know you've been busy.
Oh, yeah, I've been busy. I'm over at the Action Network, Raheem Palmer. My Twitter name is DJR to the Izzy. That's DJRTODAIZZA. You can find me. We got the Heat Check show. That's every Thursday night. Myself, Matt Moore, Chris Raybon, we give out picks. I'll have a pick for you tonight. We got the Action Network podcast. It's called the NBA Buffet. We'll probably change the name to the Victory Lap because me and my guy, Brandon Anderson, we always love to like kind of brag about our bets. We're very competitive. It's a very competitive thing. So I'm blessed, man. I'm happy to be doing something that I love.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. Raheem, thank you very much for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt. Thank you. I appreciate it.